First Pet Veterinary Center's Antibiotics and the Age of Resistance, July 2021. And that's also on your main agenda. And that has the speaker, interactive presentations on Zoom, a couple of them. An hour and a half, see.
I make a motion we approve the hour and a half CE for First Pet Veterinary Center's regarding antibiotics and resistance.
Second.
Motion on the floor, any second to approve the CE, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That motion passes and that's approved. Number five. Board may review, discuss, and take action on request regarding the clarification of interpretation of ARS 3222-42B pertaining to certified veterinarian technician application requirements for ARS 41101.02. And this is the question asker is Ariane McGinty and the lead is Ms. Frost. This is on your main agenda.
Yeah. She's got a bachelor's of science and equine, bachelor's in equine science. Wonder if she did the drug testing on bachelor's.
I had to ask for request permission.
Okay, yes.
So I think somebody granted me permission. Thank you guys, or whoever. Did you grant me permission to open the transcript?
Yeah, it was locked on mine, so I wasn't able to open it.
Transcript?
Yeah, it was locked on mine. I couldn't open it last night. So I, but it gave me a little window to ask for permission, so I sent it. Yeah, which that, worry about that. The only thing I see is,
I can't.
Yes, it's narrowly focused on equine, and in her comparison, I think she stretched some of those comparisons, and there's no work experience. Almost all of these we've had prior, they've already been working in a veterinary hospital and been doing some stuff, and they had the transcripts.
We can't. You can't consider their work experience. The way that the law is written, it's equivalent of graduation in an institution approved by the board.
No, I don't think this is equivalent. It's too heavy on one species. It's good for equine stuff, but I mean, as a certified technician, I defer to Ms. Frost on this because you're the technician, but I don't see this as equivalent personally.
Can you repeat that, Dr. Wright?
Oh, sorry. I'm going to defer to you because you're the lead on this, of course, but I this is just very focused on equine. I don't see this as equivalent to a technician course for sitting for the exam. But, I mean, I definitely would like to know what your opinion is on it.
Yeah, so I went back and forth on this because of what you just said, Dr. Wright. But when I really considered it, some of her, I don't think she did a really great job at aligning things, but when I went back and kind of reconsidered it along with all of the general education for that bachelor's, I had less of a concern after I went back and reviewed that a little bit differently than how she laid it out. I think she didn't, again, do a great job laying it out. Now, of course, it does look a lot more specific, right? But whenever I look at an AVMA accredited program, it's incredibly canine feline specific. So I felt like that wouldn't necessarily be a problem because veterinarians even track maybe small or large, right? So you're gonna get one or the other. So when I kind of went back and considered it, I felt like I would make a motion to approve her, education of fluency, but obviously that's for everybody else's consideration, but that is my motion.
We made you the lead for a reason.
Yes.
Is there any second?
I'll second.
So I was just going to comment, I hope Dr. Burnham back you up. If you can do a horse, a dog is easy.
I was going to ask what Dr. Byrne felt about the transferability.
I've known a lot of people, I've known people that have taken this, have this degree, because I went to Colorado State. And it's a pretty intensive, most people track this in preparation to go to vet school. If they're, I think it's probably good.
All right, so the motion on the floor is to accept the equivalence regardless of work experience. Shame on you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That motion passes. The board may review, discuss, and take action on the American Association of Veterinary State Boards call for nominations for AAVSB leadership positions. Byrne wants to be president.
You know, I sent a letter to, or an email to Chrissy, because I was like, I haven't heard, done anything in the last year. I was like, I feel like, I don't know if I've been removed from this position forcibly or what, and I haven't heard anything back. So I was like, I don't know if I just went on pause for the last year, or if I I assume I'm still in my position.
They put everything on hold.
That's, I just, without getting random emails, I'm kind of like, is something just like, is it all frozen right now or what? But I was like, I sat back there being like, I feel like I'm a horrible chairman because I've not done anything in this year.
Well, unless you quit, you're probably still up.
God. You're still getting the tweet till the day I die.
We've still been having virtual meetings. So the one I'm on, the Leadership Development Task Force, I've still been having meetings. Like, I just had one like 2 weeks ago.
Of course, I'm by law, though.
And so I have one coming up in like May 20th.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. I just meant that the bylaws and things were on hold because of this.
Well, good, because I thought I was just missing stuff. I was like, I don't know if I was just thrown out or what.
So you picked up this one?
Pretty much, yeah.
Careful to breathe your hand. I'm going to sit on it.
So leadership positions, is that like, what do you mean by leadership positions? Like
president.
Actually, on the board of
for the board itself. Yeah. Oh, okay. Yes. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. That's always a good thing to try, like maybe on your last year as a board member here, to try to think it on the AAVSB board.
And that's kind of what I'm thinking maybe for next year. Because am I done in February?
But if you're on the, aren't you supposed to be a board member to be on that?
No.
You don't have to be, surprisingly. You have to be within a couple years of it, I think. There's a
really?
Lot of people.
If I could run for that and travel the U.S.?
Uh-huh. That's right.
No. Give me the next president.
So not this year. So no action on this one this year.
No action on this. But everybody, please keep it in the back of your mind. If you so. Board may review, discuss, take action on ICVA species-specific examination availability. And Victoria is our lead.
Yes. So, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, we have talked about this before. It's probably been a while. I got this email about it, which reminded me, which I just wanted to throw it out there again. Sometimes we struggle with, disciplinary action in some cases. So this is really just a reminder that this is an option that we have used before and we could use again, especially maybe if there's cases of, gross negligence or, some of the really rougher violations, you may want to require someone to take this species-specific exam. It is $400 to the person taking the exam, which we would pass on to them. That's just another option to know about.
Answered 3 out of 4 correctly.
Good job. You see, that's easy.
I need Dr. Byrne to help me with number 4.
Question for Mr. Harrison.
Number 4.
If we would require this of someone, and it's a $400 fee, does that factor into the limitation of the $1,000 per violation, or would that be independent of that?
No, it's completely independent. It's just any time that we would order like continuing education and there's fees associated with
okay.
that as well.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay, thank you.
Sure.
So we think I'll tying up,
yeah.
Or is that something
yes.
else? That is tying up?
Yep.
Give Michelle a license, that's easy.
Mm-hmm. Are you still in question 4?
Give Michelle a license, that's easy. Done.
Okay.
I don't know. That's what I've seen done. I don't know.
I usually give her fluids and anti-inflammatories. It's muscle burning up.
All I know is that I've seen him give him a big dose of Lasix, and within 5 minutes, they are screaming like you would not believe.
Yeah, it'd be better shut your kidneys down.
I mean, it's like...
That makes them pee.
Hard enough to make a hole in there.
I remember dark urine horses. All right, so we don't really have any action on this, then. It's just reminding us it's an option.
Right.
And, well, since we're reminding ourselves, we haven't used it. How do we remind ourselves to use it?
Well, that's things we don't want to set out actual, I don't think, rules and regulations on how to use it, but yeah, I think it's a good thing to remind us somehow.
Yeah.
So, do we know how other states are using it? Can we ask them how other states are using it? I mean, is it like in every single violation that they're like, here, take this test on animals and stuff?
It's used in a variety of ways. I think in the information I read that there's one state that uses it for any licensee that's applying for licensure in their state, believe it or not.
Instead of a state test?
Yeah.
Or in general?
Yeah. But most people, I think, and they recommend it as, you know, waiver for disciplinary action to check, you know, most boards have required people to take CE. So great, and this is what we did.
Yeah.
And the person that we used it in, that you may remember, that's what happened. That person had to do like 100 hours of CE.
Oh, yeah.
And we made a red test. So that makes sense in all regards of any training in any place. You want to see if someone learned anything from their training. So it's actually a nice idea.
Well, we have, in this, we have a recommendations thing. Is it in this one?
I don't know if there's anything. Tracy, is there anything in the red notebook about options? I don't know that there is.
More options for what?
About him, like ideas for
discipline.
Like a 3 hour violations and stuff. I think there's something with this, but it's just the most commonly used.
Yeah, so
I mean, I don't know, maybe we have the option. If we get around to doing something that says like the options we have for fines or C or this kind of test or something in just one of these pages, we can
work on.
I think it needs to be updated.
Cafeteria
list.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. At least it's in there.
Amendment.
Yeah. Take a look at the guacamole.
Sure, we can.
A la carte. A la carte and combinations.
Thank you. That's all I have about that.
All right. Next is number 9, board may review, discuss, take action regarding the adoption of protocols for conducting the call to the public agenda item. And Ms. Krieger is the lead on that one.
Yeah, you know, I read through this and I think it looks great. I don't know if anybody else feels like there was anything missing from it, but I think it looked great and I would make a motion to approve.
Second.
Yes. Is
there a possible, sorry, just to get into the discussion portion, is there a possibility to make it that you have to be in person to do a call to the public, or do you have to be on by phone as allowed? Yeah, because it's like, you can just let anybody randomly.
We just need to be consistent. And so we accommodate telephonic appearances, so we need to do so on all the agenda items.
Okay.
Would be appropriate to.
So, but do we, I mean, if we have to call them? I mean, because it's like putting the onus on us to get yelled at.
Right, that is a special kind of accommodation that I think, you know, probably is a little bit on the Chamber of Commerce type side of things.
Okay. Which we started because of COVID.
Right.
Yeah. So as long as we accept any other kind of telephonic stuff, we have to be yelled at on this. But
I hope we always had telephonic anyway if they couldn't get here. I mean, not nearly as much, but we still use it.
And we want it to be on our calendar, our clock, as opposed to theirs giving them a topic all in.
Well, yeah, but that's why I was wondering if we could limit it to just in-person stuff. I was hoping we could be like, you have to be here to actually address us, but no, we can't.
You know, you're already in this what you're adopting today is already limiting the amount of time that the person speaks. and it really isn't that burdensome for us to call someone, so I would err on the Chamber of Commerce sort of thing, if someone is disabled or, you know, for some other reason, and we're still kind of in the gray area with COVID, so at least for now, I would recommend that we still allow people to call for that.
All right, so we are going to adopt the protocols and conduct as outlined in the script. Yes, and seconded?
Yep.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Thank you, Mark.
Motion passes. Number 10, board may review, discuss, take action regarding results of American Association of Veterans State Boards Board Basics and Beyond Training. And we have our very own student, Ms. Solomon, who has lead us on that.
Thank you.
That's your supplement.
Yes, I will try and keep it brief. There are a few points I wanted to bring. I'm only going to be covering half a dozen from this two-page list. The first is bullet number 3 under meeting follow-up. It says, understand that everyone on the board is a public member. Some have veterinary medicine expertise. I've already mentioned the concern about not all public members can have access to the full AAVSB site because we're not allowed to have accounts. So I am hoping to pursue that with the board's blessing so that public members can have full access to the site. Also interesting to note, one point of information I want to share is that this included the United States and Canada. And in Canada, they have a very different system. It's basically the equivalent of the province's AVMA that does the regulation. They nominate the members there, so it's the professional organization. How you separate the trade from the regulation, I think is ripe for conflict of interest, but that's how they do it in Canada. And they have one public member. Under board operations, I just wanted to note bullet number 6, contact fellow regulatory boards to discuss issues. Just for edification, I just wanted to discuss a process. Does that go through Victoria? Does it go through the chair? Just so we have it, so not each board member is reaching out independently. What would be the recommended access for contacting similar regulatory boards throughout the U.S. and Canada? Anybody have any suggestions?
We always direct board staff to do it. I don't think we should take it on ourselves as individual members to
do it. I agree.
That being said, I have called up other boards just asking questions on certain things that weren't pertaining necessarily to even individuals. So I think as a private person, you still have the ability to call and talk to them. But I wouldn't do anything in board business individually. I'd let Victoria and board staff do all that.
I just want to clarify it. Okay. On the second page, under board efficiencies, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Again, item number 6, meet with your fellow regulatory boards, i.e. pharmacy. This creates power and stimulates conversation. I found that the pharmacy board has their meetings on YouTube. So I've been watching a few hours of the pharmacy board. And first, let me say, between the AAVSB and observing the pharmacy board meetings, I want to congratulate our staff and our chairman and the board as a whole for the way in which we conduct business. When it comes to comparing nationally and in Canada, I'd say we're in the top 5. As far as efficiency and effectiveness. So I was very proud to be representing this board.
I agree with you on that. I think we're a little irreverent in how we follow the Robert's Rules of Orders a lot of times. But I think we're very efficient. I think our board staff is a huge portion of that.
I'm really
very lucky for board staff. What's that?
I'm really hurt that you said that.
Oh, good. then I was clear.
And I don't know if the board wants to, if it leave it to individually. I'm interested and will continue to view videos of the pharmacy board just because I'm interested in how they conduct business, how they deal with opioid dependency cases and that kind of thing. So with the board's permission, I'll continue to do that. I know you have.
That's why I'm jealous.
I know, I have. Except for El Jefe Supremo, other public members don't have accounts. And so I don't know that the board wants to establish any kind of formal liaisons with other state medical boards, but.
Hey, it's always nice just to kind of reach out and say, hey, you're always welcome to come to our meeting, but they've got so much going on, their lives are not going to, but it is nice because, I mean, looking at the funeral board, and if we're going to pass off the crematory inspections to them potentially, I mean, so I mean, working with different boards is very important.
Chiropractic
board.
The
human medical orthopedic or osteopathic. So I mean, it is good to have those relationships for sure because we do cross over from time to time for events.
And I think it goes without just inviting them to come before us.
We should go say hi.
Us to say hi to them. So
yeah.
I plan on attending a pharmacy board meeting in person. They go for 2 days every 2 months. So I don't plan on attending a 2-day session, but I do plan on attending at least 4 hours of a pharmacy board sometime within the next 6 to 8 months. So I think just if we can keep Victoria apprised of any interest you have, and you know, if you're planning on observing, and if you do, when. To continue on down the line, under outreach, this one I found really interesting because these are suggestions from the AAVSB. Utilize the AAVSB student outreach presentations at your jurisdiction's veterinary and veterinary technician schools. So I would like us to be able to forward that information from the AAVSB to our public and private colleges of veterinary medicine and any educational institutions offering.
So what that is, Jane, is they have a template for people like myself to go to schools to give presentations. It's specific to the state. It's helping directors give them a head start to go do that. Is what that presentation is. That's what that's meant to be.
I still would like one day, if we can, to organize a meeting over at one of the schools so that they are actually there to attend
to
the meeting.
To actually have.
I've talked about that for years, and I think it'd be amazing. I know it's going to be hard now that we have U of A, because you can't get down to U of A very easy. But if we can have a board meeting at like Midwestern or something, or even invite maybe the whatever year it's going
to
be.
On the east side, but it's easier to get to Tucson than it is right
true.
There.
Yeah.
I think it would be handy because I think incorporating those students in, and I know we've invited them here before, but I mean, it's not going to happen. But if we can do get an auditorium there or something and do a meeting and say, okay, well, if they can come over at least for the initial investigative reports, I mean, this other boilerplate stuff is boring. Nobody
right,
wants to see this.
Right, right.
Except for me, I love it. But, I mean, it'd be nice to be able to do the informals in front of them so that they see what that process is, because they don't want them to be scared just because a complaint's made and now they're just terrified for their life. So,
this is a good time to remind me of that, because in the next month or so, we'll be setting the dates for the next year.
I say that every afternoon that I can.
And the second one is collaborate with other boards to offset the cost of technology such as streaming the meetings. We've had these discussions, so whatever is workable and most easily workable, I think will be, because I think that technology is here to stay. It came out of the pandemic, but it's here to stay. The last two items are invite veterinary students to our meetings. And I would like to extend, for the board to extend an invitation both to Midwestern and to the University of Arizona College of Veterinary Medicine. I think those are the only two veterinary schools in Arizona to attend a board meeting.
Yeah.
And just let us know if they can let Victoria know in advance which ones what they'd like to attend.
And it would be nice, and I would say that the few technician schools have actually come out before.
Yeah.
Not at school yet.
It's been a while.
Yeah, so it's like it was nice seeing the technicians come in and actually see that. And
yes.
The ones they called in front of us.
Yes, yes.
So it'd be nice if the vet students were able to do that. But again, I think it'd be easier logistically, honestly, if we took the time to go to a school as opposed to them coming here. It would not happen if they came here.
And last item is to invite licensees to make it eligible, if they attend a board meeting where they are let's say 4 hours of a board meeting where they are not on the agenda, they do not have a case, they're here to observe and learn, I think that would be great to be able to offer them some CE credit.
That's part of our role, our role change, that will, that's something we've talked about in the past. It's gotta be a role change.
Okay. And by the way, in general, I found the training to be excellent. One particular presenter, Dale Atkinson, is very, very good. Yeah, a lot of it, working in local government for 25 years and having been on the board now a couple of years, was pretty familiar stuff. But I really appreciated the dialogue between all the participants.
Yeah, Dale, he's no Mark, but I mean, he does really well at the
He's no Mark.
He's not even paying attention to me.
Just gave you a compliment.
But Dale, yeah, Dale's really good at a lot of those presentations. I mean, the very last presentation of all the AAVSB meetings is always him going over cases and stuff. It's always very interesting.
And I think I got an informal award for asking the most questions, which probably doesn't surprise anybody. And
look at my surprise face.
And I won a $50 Amazon gift card for successfully completing the scavenger hunt.
Good job. So what are you buying us?
See this face? Yeah. It says fat yes. Thank you.
Good job.
All right, next up is Board may review discussing action on the denial of a veterinary technician certification for failure to pass the state certified veterinary technician exam. That list is available upon request, and there are no documents.
Is that in the red book?
That is a standard.
Is this the I move to deny certification? Okay.
Yeah.
I move to deny certification for applicants that failed the BDNE and or the state exam and authorize Ms. Whitmore to represent the board if the settlement conference is requested with her authority limited to denial of certification.
Second.
My motion on the floor is second. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Motion passes. Board may review, discuss, and take action regarding compliance with the continuing education waiver granted to Melanie Rettler, DVM, and possible challenges impacting ability to comply. And we'll let Victoria take the lead on that.
Mr. Chairman, members of board, so you may remember that the board granted Dr. Rettler a CE waiver back in December. Because she indicated that she was going to be able to complete her CE. The board gave her an extension to March 31st, 2021. On that day, she called me to ask how to submit the proof of certificates, and she indicated she was going to mail them. Time went on, I never got them. Sometime in April, I left her a message asking for them. I never heard back. I called her again last week and did speak to her, and she's said right away that she had emailed them to me right that day when she got on the phone. I didn't have them. To later find out that she had just, you know, had a typo in the email address, so sent them to the wrong place. So if you remember the story, she's had several CE waivers. Every year she has difficulties, you know, renewing her license and things like that. So the question is, we didn't receive it by March 31st. The way that we granted the waiver, we want to split hairs. We did just say have it complete by March 31st. We didn't say to her, it must be here by March 31st, although I think that was inferred. So I don't know if you want to do anything with that piece of it. She now has submitted, I didn't open all of her attachments because as you saw, she sent every single one in a separate email. I believe she's probably complied now. Do you want to do anything about the fact that it was late, or should we just leave it as it is?
She's looking for a specialty license in glaucoma.
Well, my thing about the whole CE waivers and stuff is, look, if you can't sit through a class, if you can't watch a video for an hour or 20 hours or whatever over 2 years, you cannot practice. You don't have the ability to practice at that point. So I'm very adamant about CDC waivers should not just be granted and just willy-nilly thrown out there, because like I said, if you can't sit there in a chair and listen to someone talk, how are you practicing? How can you practice? So I've got major issues with a lot of these. Now, things are going to happen, again, where something happens at the last minute, everybody waits at the last minute. Again, that's more on them and not on us for their time management and planning. But when you keep giving people exceptions and exceptions and they still can't follow the rules, how am I supposed to trust you to live up to it? When you simply just can't sit there and listen to a lecture and tell me about it.
So, Dr. Wright, that kind of goes to the point, kind of point that I was trying to point out in a gentle way. Is there some underlying issue that the board needs to be aware of?
Yes.
And so one idea is perhaps that we go do a premise inspection, because it has been a while since we've been, she has a mobile unit practice, to kind of see how that is. You know, because you have to start thinking, is what we're seeing, what the client's seeing, what's going on with patient care there.
So CE is one of the simplest things we do.
Right.
So, yeah, I would ask.
There's a lot of flexibility.
So I guess is that just directing your board staff to go do an inspection in the next 6 months?
If that seems
or so?
Like a good first step to you, then always, you know, to kind of what we could find, we could always ask her to come in. You all could actually speak with her, just get a sense.
Out of all these years, I mean, we've been doing this over and over and over again.
Yes.
And she's never been here.
Correct. Yeah.
Let's invite her.
Well, either that or invite her to go see a specialist.
Let's say, I mean, I think starting with inspection is a good idea.
Let's see what.
Take a sneak peek at the premise first.
What's going on first?
I don't want to step on your toes. Direct board staff to do an inspection in the next, what do you think is reasonable, 6 months? Or
6 months.
Yeah, 6 months sometime. And then based on that, we could talk about inviting her in.
Okay.
So direct.
Sounds good.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
All right, here we go. Next up is board meeting review, discuss, take action regarding ARS 362525 related to the availability of electronic prescribing for veterinarians.
So, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, this is just a follow-up item from the April agenda. The board directed me to reach out to the director of the AZVMA, which I did, to ask if they were aware of such software. She indicated that they were not, and she also reached out to the AVMA, and that person said that no such thing exists. So I think we're fine for at least another year. The board voted last year to look at this every year, so we'll just come back to that.
And this was built into the statute that we're exempted until there's a reasonable thing, right? Or there's
until we acknowledge it, leaves it up to
that, us. That's what it is. Yeah, until this board determines that it's widely available for use.
That's in the statute of that law, not in our rules.
Right. Right.
Cool, okay.
Yes,
okay.
It's not in the practice.
Yeah, okay.
So I got, on the human side, this is already implemented and it's a law, right? Mm-hmm. So it's the same software. Right?
It's crazy expensive.
Number, I know. There was some number. What did it say?
MPI.
There was a number missing, and that's
MPI.
Why.
MPI.
Yeah, we can't have MPI numbers. That's another big thing.
So my husband's a software engineer, though, so I was like, honey, you need to get on this.
MPI is National Provider of Accreditation.
There you go.
MPI is like tracking a number nationally, but you have to be able to bill under Medicare and Medicaid to be able to have that. When they first did it, there is a veterinarian section, so a lot of veterinarians applied for it.
Yeah.
Then they realized that it was illegal for us to actually hold an MPI, so they made us all surrender it, which doesn't make sense to me, because it's like, you just take a number away, why don't I just surrender something, but okay. So there is a section for veterinarians still to be able to apply for an MPI, but it's illegal for us to have an MPI number.
All right, anyone go down that rabbit
hole? Exactly, it's a headache.
If I get tired of working for Behringer,
yeah.
Can I get with some software guy and come up with that? Maybe me and Noah?
I have this conversation with pharmacists all the time because they want an MPI number for prescriptions, and I'm like, that's illegal, I can't have it. And they don't understand that. So, sorry, I have that conversation a lot.
And who authorizes MPI numbers? What federal agencies?
The Department FDA? Of Health or something? Or, I don't know, but it's like a Department of Health type thing.
Okay.
It's something up there.
It'd be the FDA.
Just curious.
It's above my pay grade.
All right, sorry, I didn't want to take
it. Don't let me talk.
All right, so we don't need to take any action on that. The law has us covered, but at some point, maybe there'll be something. Maybe I'll be rich.
I'll sign out.
14, board may review, discuss, take action on return to pre-COVID process for board approval of premises license. No documents there.
Just me again.
Donna, can't wait to get back on the road.
So if you all remember, last April or May, the board voted to delegate authority for approving all types of licenses to the director because of COVID and since our processes have changed and that. So since our last meeting, Dawn has returned to doing all in-person inspections. She's totally back on the road in a really big way. I think it is best for the board to continue to approve premises license because there is a large subjective area, as you saw in that earlier piece. If you remember, it's been a long time, typically for an agenda in the past, the inspector would be giving you a list of all the inspections she did with the potential violations listed. So, and those would go on the consent agenda. So if any of you saw anything that you were concerned about that we didn't point out, you could pull it off the consent agenda and we could talk about it. So there, to me, that there's a large, you know, opinions that should be yours on whether or not to grant licenses or things. So I'm going to suggest that the board remove the delegated authority to me to approve those licenses for premises and go back to the way that we were before, or just the board is approving those.
I would say yes, but still give you the ability to kind of modify inspections as needed based on potential health concerns, or again, we're seeing numbers changing in certain countries, so give you the authority to change it again if we need to.
Okay.
So I mean, but I've
and I just advise us if
so there's something we need to vote on, or is that a directive?
I think that you should.
Yeah, there should be a motion.
So I'll make a motion that we return to our previous process for board of approval of premise licenses, with still granting judgment authority to board staff for how those inspections are carried out. Does that make sense?
That works.
Second.
Motion on the floor in a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That motion passes. Next is the executive director report.
All right, so the first one is investigative committee openings. We now have one. We still have one public member we've been looking for quite a while.
One public member on AM or PM?
Is it
AM? The public member is at the PM.
PM. PM. And then the veterinarian opening is coming up, right? Is that right?
On the PM.
At the end of the year.
So. And that's PM also?
Yes.
I'm going to start recruiting again.
Who's on the PM?
Well, some people are away because those are kind of typical to fill.
Not from Tucson.
Yeah, it's always great to have people from other places.
Yes.
So that would be encouraged as well. The next item I have is just to discuss the investigative caseload and then a related statute to that. So since COVID started, as you know, we missed some meetings because we were meeting remotely, so these cases weren't heard. So subsequently, cases backed up. So the perfect storm also happened that all kinds of people started complaining. So we've had many, many more complaints that we have in any other year. So how many were at Tracy? You told me yesterday. I apologize, I forgot. 140?
142.
142, and normally we have about 100-ish.
100, yeah.
Right.
100, no. I think the most we have is like 125.
The most is that.
But usually it's about 100, between 100 and 125.
So, and we're not even at the end of the year yet, and so we're already at that high number. We do just have one investigator. So we're gonna struggle to dig out of this hole as far as how quickly that we're turning these cases around. So the standard that the Auditor General's office has is 180 days to resolve a case. So before we were well within that, we were always related with that. So now probably twice double that, would that be correct? So that's not a place that we want to be. So Tracy and Mark and I have talked extensively and try to think of ways of how we can, you know, move this along faster. And there aren't, I think, short of me doing what I already am trying to do, which is to establish another
what do you call it, an investigator position. One other idea that we came across of is to look at the law, which is ARS 32-2235B, and I'll invite Tracy and Mark to jump in at any point. But this is a law in the Practice Act that gives specifically calls out the staff investigator to be able to skip the investigative committee and take a case directly to the board. And you see that the Tracy's done that in the past. Often it's typically, you know, somebody's filed it against the wrong person, you know, or it's typically that's what she's brought. So we've talked about now of just, you know, empowering Tracy to do more of those in a deeper dive way. Traditionally, the agency has not taken advantage of that in a way that, you know, that we could. For something. But she has to, if I remember the law right, has to believe that it would be dismissed. So it can't be, she sees an obvious medical record, that still has to go to the investigative committee the way the law is written. But she could take something that she just thinks is, would flat out be dismissed. And if she does that, the board can still say, you know, no, send this back to the investigative committee, you know, or do what you normally do. So that was our thought on one way. You know, we do have no idea how many that will help, but it will help some. You know, even if she can identify a handful, that'll shake those loose from not having to go through the investigative committee process and take and shave off, you know, a lot of time on that. So I just wanted to see if that sounds okay with you, if Tracy starts taking advantage more of that particular law practice act.
And it's already in statute. We don't have to do anything, right?
Correct.
Right.
Victoria, God bless you.
Mark, in all the executive orders that were issued around the pandemic, there were none that extended these kinds of deadlines?
This.
No.
Wow.
And the
next time.
Yeah, the 180 days from the Auditor General's office is not a law, it's not a time frame, it's just something when they audit agencies, they always throw that out there.
Yeah, it's more of an aspiration.
Okay,
yeah.
And I think one of the things that Victoria, Tracy, and I talked about with respect to, you know, presenting this to the board, you know, Victoria just mentioned with premises how they used to be on a consent. And I think what we could do, at least initially, is present these cases that Tracy's identifying as a dismissal, with you having the ability to pull any of them to discuss further or to take different action.
I think that's great.
And we'd still get this. Except for the ICR summary, we still get everything else?
Yeah. Right, yeah. Victoria, do you have...
It wouldn't save me much time.
No.
Do you have any timeline, which, you know, like in 18 months, we hope to be back to the 180 days, or 24 months, or is, you know, do you have any ballpark idea? Is it how many years is it going to take us to recover?
If they keep coming in at this rate, we won't. The way that we're set up.
People got cranky during the pandemic.
Yeah, I was going to say, I bet there's just a lot of cases that probably won't bar, but.
Because one of the bottlenecks is the investigative committee. We've got two committees, but as you've seen, they're difficult to fill.
Yeah.
Right, so we could try to get a third committee and another staff person, but are we really going to be able to fill a third committee? They are volunteers. They're taking off, you know, half a day of their time. So how realistic is that? You know, I don't know.
And so, that's up to us if we want to form a third investigative committee, correct?
Yeah, there's no limit, I don't think.
Years ago, we had two investigators, and then when we had the bobblehead situation, we actually just formed a third committee. Based on the two committees, we had a volunteer, a third committee from the AM and the PM, and it just held on a different day, and so that kind of helped process those.
Yeah, that is a good idea. That makes me get people to do it. So we're continuing to try to brainstorm and think of ways to do that. We're certainly open to suggestions on other ways to do that. But we also. It's my personal opinion that one of the strengths of this agency is that we do have in our Practice Act this two-step process for people that we can tell complainants when they're, you know, out the door is two different sets of people have looked at this and, you know, came to the same conclusion most of the time. And most boards don't have that. So that is a strength of us, but at the same time, that adds time to our process. So there's a, you know, there's a push on that. So, but I mainly just want to let you know that we are in a serious position, that we're not in where we would like to be time-wise with these cases. People want them on both sides to go quickly, so I'm dragging them out further is optimal.
Yeah, it would be like Washington, 3 years later,
right.
4 years later.
Yes, and California, yep. So that's all I had about that. Anybody else have anything else to talk about on that one? Okay. So something, the next topic is there our July meeting. As you may remember, sometimes in the past, we've been able to have a phone meeting in July. And so I'm recommending, based on what I just talked about, that we have an in-person meeting and we go through with our normal process if we're gonna have enough people. So I know I heard from one person that we're gonna be here by phone. Two people. You're gonna be gone. You're gonna be maybe by phone.
Yeah.
Does anybody else know that they would not be able to participate in a July meeting at this point? Okay, so well, it sounds like we have enough at this point, that at least today and May, we'll assume that that'll be an in-person meeting. Okay. That's all I needed. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we get the approval of minutes and the April 21, 2020 regular session. Dr. Wright is abstaining.
I make a motion that we approve the April 21st, 2021 regular session minutes.
Second.
A motion on the floor and a second. Is there any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That motion passes. I can't believe we have no executive session.
Yeah.
I can't remember the last time we did have executive session minutes to approve. Summary of current events. You know, Dr. Roy is going to the Galapagos. Anybody else?
My birthday is next weekend.
Ooh. Happy birthday.
Ooh. I didn't know it was
is it a big one?
That's your first one.
You're a young stud.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, it's all down here from downhill.
It has been downhill for a while.
Did you say it was a big one?
It wasn't.
It's not.
No,
I asked if it was.
No, my pandemic 40. Now it's just 41. Now it's okay. I got nothing to look forward to until retirement.
All right, so I'm taking it nobody has anything brilliant to share for this event.
I'm
seeing
so
I had some neck in there. What was I'm going to tell you? Probably nothing you want to know. So, a question for Assistant AG. We just voted and approved our new call with public policy. Is that an effective immediately?
It will be effective at the June board meeting.
Oh, so did Joe get?
Well, we've already notified the individual who will be attending this afternoon's talk. He will have 5 minutes.
He will.
But you're more than welcome to read the statement with the modification.
Yes.
Just to upset him a little more.
Do it.
Just to wind him up. Or to let him know for next month.
Are you going to be the clock keeper?
To let him know next month.
Well, because in the script it says it's only got 3 minutes.
Right, and I said, you can read the script, but modify and give him 5.
Okay.
Yeah, and then I think what we'll do is we'll probably communicate that with him between meetings.
Okay.
Can I
let me do it?
Taking pictures of your latest off hunt.
All right. Tracy, if you're ready, I guess we're ready. I was worried when I got on the freeway and realized I forgot my hearing aids. Now I'm not so worried.
You did very well. I would be sunk without mine.
Tracy at the veterinary board. I'm going to put you on conference phone with the board.
Okay. All right, we are on section 8, and this is the call to the public. The board is committed to committing its call to the public in a manner that ensures those wishing to address the board are afforded a fair opportunity to do so. Everyone wishing to address the board will be given 5 minutes. Speakers will be advised when 30 minutes remain and asked to conclude comments. 30 seconds, yeah. This is the time for the public to provide comment to the board. By law, members of the board may not discuss items that are not specifically identified on the agenda and thus cannot respond to any questions. The only action the board can take as a result of public comment is to direct staff to study the matter or ask the staff to put the matter on a future agenda. The board may exercise either option at the conclusion of the 5 minute period. If remarks from the public contain board member criticism, the open meeting law does allow for the individual members of the public body that are the subject of criticism the opportunity to respond. At all times during the call to the public, everyone is expected to treat each other with respect and civility. If a person does not adhere to these basic courtesies, the board will ask that person to modify their behavior. If they continue to exhibit disruptive behavior, the board reserves the right to end the call to the public or take other appropriate action. And that is the end of my script, and your 5 minutes begin right now. Please state your name for the record first, though.
Yes, my name is Dr. John Johnson, and I heard what you said. I have a disagreement. You instructed me over the years. I have been trying to tell that boy I need more time because it is a lifetime experience. Seems to me that having talking to the director of the board on and off for years, and one time I got a few minutes more to talk, and that is not enough. Anyway, I want to abide to your instructions. However, that is not enough. That is the direction of my speech. And also, I found out this board, Arizona Veterinary Medical Examining Board, seems to me is a mafia group. You guys are doing a lot of things which is not acceptable to the public or the profession, but I have mentioned many times before, since 1987, the quick tryout, the Arizona legislators, which an investigation through the Arizona Auditor General, they found out. The conclusion was at the time the governor was Harris Simington, and they recommended to suspend this board and to give this to handle the situation in Arizona by another entity. But that is where my conclusion is. So this is not fair for Arizona people. 7.2 million people live in Arizona. And every meeting I see more than 15 allegations every month against the performance of the veterinarians. But I believe it is not properly handled. That's what I mentioned in the beginning. It is a mafia group. This is not good for profession. This is not good for the public either. And I know the Arizona Attorney General is listening to my comment. I had a great opportunity to speak my mind to the Attorney General. Nothing is happening. This is my conviction. Every time I speak, I get a lot of time to speak to a board, like every meeting, every function in Arizona, conclude with a garbage disposal. I feel the Arizona public are treated like the 5 minutes in court, like a garbage disposal. When every conversation is over, then the last man comes to clean up the garbage. This is not right. I think our public should be given the priority to talk about the cleaning of the additional people. And like I mentioned, that we have a terrible problem in the board. And it's not my testimony. And the auditor never did that. So it is available to everyone to review. What my prayer is, and the board is not doing the right thing. For example, Arizona board chairman himself is an animal killer. So this is not right. What information this chairman can bring to the board of Arizona? He himself is guilty. So this is not right. This is 21st century, it's COVID time, the fair is fair. So, and I'm starting my speech now because I wanted to bounce within my limits. And a great bishop died in India. 100 years he did not listen to me.
Dr. Johnson, hi, Dr. Johnson, it's Victoria. You've got about 30 seconds left, okay?
Okay, that bishop finally before his death, 4 days ago, he said he was being filled all people except Dr. Johnson. So only little will come out. Thanks for your time, Victoria.
You're welcome.
Think about it.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.
That ends the call to the public, and our next item is our future meeting date, and that will be Wednesday, July 16th, right here, same bat time, same bat channel. Chair would entertain a motion to adjourn. June 16th.
June. I make a motion that we adjourn.
Second.
A motion on the floor and second to adjourn. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Dr. Wright, why are you closing?
No.
Okay. We are adjourned.